Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express. You should have heard the knocked out jailbird sing that rock. Everybody let rock.
Everybody in old cell block was dancing to the jailhouse rock. Who doesn't like a little Elvis, especially at the Christmas season? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And down in the 916 area code is Sean Boyd. Sean, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Sean Wally? Of course, man, here on the Double, we give you a heavy dose of NFL action and all things sports thereafter. Of course, we will not disappoint today. But we're going to take a different turn, of course, and we have a special guest on, Sean Wally, and it should be a lot of fun for our guests.
It very much will be, Sean. The story we're going to dive into is an epic one and one that will get everybody to put their thinking caps on and turn back the clock a few years.
Yeah, you know, turn back the clock a few years. We're talking about, man, the great, great days of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, Sean Wally, one of the things about the Steelers is this. Out of all the teams in the NFL, and we can talk about the Seahawks, the Raiders, 49ers, Cowboys, Packers, you name it, there isn't a team that's more consistent. And I'll say that again. There isn't a team that's more consistent than the Pittsburgh Steelers. And there's a reason for that and the things that they've done and how they've paved the way. And so I'm excited about our special guest, and you know, we'll get a chance to talk about, you know, how they've pioneered particular athletes to play in the NFL. So it should be fun.
That's right. Big time guest number one coming up here in a few minutes is journalist and author Andy Conti. Be joining us from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area to talk about the Steelers and how they went from an afterthought to the start of their prominence in the 60s and 70s.
You know, in the 60s and 70s, and then they've gone on to do special things, the 80s and 90s. And of course, you know, Sean, you know that I am a diehard Oakland Raiders fan, or a diehard Raiders fan. And Al Davis pinned the franchise as the team of the decades. And that meant, you know, winning Super Bowls in the 70s, 80s. And then having winning seasons in the 90s, and, you know, a lot of people kind of laugh and mock at that. But if there is a team of the decades, it would have to be the Pittsburgh Steelers and the amazing things that they have done. Of course, Pittsburgh is making a run at another title again this year. They hold the most Super Bowls, Sean. So out of all the NFL teams that, and whatever your favorite team is, nobody can talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers because they hold the reins at 6 Super Bowls. And, you know, there's a couple of teams after that. I believe the Dallas Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers have 5. But there's none better than the Pittsburgh Steelers when it comes to Super Bowl titles.
Well, they had a great heyday in the 70s. And, of course, the 90s were good to them as well, the late 90s and even into the 2000s. So definitely the Steelers have done well with their roster and putting a team together that has done well regardless of the era, the time, and they found a way to win consistently.
Yeah, and we're going to give credit where credit is due, and look forward to having Andy Conti on, and we'll talk lots of Pittsburgh Steelers. I know that, you know, I have a few Pittsburgh Steeler friends, and they love to give it to me every now and again, you know, because of that historic rival between the Steelers and the Raiders. That one goes all the way back to the 60s, by the way. And so, you know, I know that they're probably listening and looking forward to listening to Andy Conti as well. But getting back to what went on this weekend, Sean Wally, and of course there's some NFL action this past weekend, and this is one of the weekends where you and I both get to come in and beat our chest and smile, and, you know, because our teams won.
They absolutely did. Both the Raiders and the Seahawks got victories. The Raiders had to fight the Denver Broncos, who were the top of the AFC West, and all things went down to the wire, and the Raiders found a way to get the victory on the road.
You know, it was a lot of fun watching that game, and here's one of the one tidbit who people who don't follow the Oakland Raiders and what they actually accomplished yesterday. Of course, Khalil Mack having 5 sacks yesterday and leading the NFL as we speak. Second, J.J. Watt with 13.5 sacks. Khalil Mack with 14. This guy is the real deal. And you talk about Von Miller with the Denver Broncos. Well, this is Von Miller part 2. And he is going to be a force to be reckoned with. But in the 2 games that these teams played this year, Sean Wally, there's only been 1 touchdown given up by the Oakland Raiders to the Denver Broncos, and that was on a defensive play, pick 6. And, man, dare I say the Raiders have held the Denver Broncos out of the end zone, which is an amazing feat in itself, considering that the Denver Broncos are to be an offensive prowess in the NFL, and pitched a shutout the second half. And so Denver scored 12 in the first half. Oakland shuts them out in the second half, put a couple of scoring drives together. The rest is history, and the Raiders win 15-12.
A low-scoring affair, but hey, the Raiders did what they needed to get out of the Mile High City victorious. And Brock Osweiler at quarterback for the Broncos, taking a couple on the chin. You mentioned those sacks from Mack and the rest of the defense. So the Raiders, you know, it seems like, and teams do this, when you play your inner division foe, you definitely amp it up a level or 10.
Yeah, so when you're saying low-scoring affairs, you expect that when you're playing your division rival. And, you know, that was the case yesterday. And you know, Oakland had that bend-but-don't-break defense, you know, what people like to tout when other teams don't get into the end zone. And they found a way to adjust. The defense this time kept the Oakland Raiders in the game when it was just the opposite. You know, I've mentioned on this show on numerous occasions that Derek Carr is the key. And if they want to win football games, they have to put the keys in the ignition in the Derek Carr and allow him to score touchdowns. But yesterday was the defense for the first time this year that allowed Derek Carr and the offense to get things going. And, you know, it was fun. It was a fun game to watch. And, you know, Raiders are still on the outside. They consider themselves in the hunt, which is good for Oakland because they haven't been here in a long time. And so it's great for Raider Nation and it's great for Northern California.
We'll talk more about the Raiders later in the hour, but let's head out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number 1 tonight. And that is journalist and author of The Color of Sundays, Andy Conti. Andy, thanks for your time tonight.
Yeah, thanks for making time for me.
Hey, Andy, it's fun for us to have you here on The Double because the book that you wrote, The Color of Sundays, deals with, you know, a huge barrier, not just in the NFL, but, man, in society in general. In the 60s, there were color barriers going on as far as, you know, Jim Crow laws and civil rights. And here in sports, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers were you know, one of the teams that paved the way to have black athletes playing in professional sports.
Yeah, we don't really think about it much today. You know, you look around the league and you think, well, nobody's really talking about race and people aren't thinking about the NFL in those terms. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago when it was an all-white league. I mean, everybody knows the story of Jackie Robinson in baseball, but they don't realize that the NFL was all-white for a period of time. From 1933 through 1946, they were... The owners basically got together and said, you know, we're not going to have any black players. And the Steelers were one of the last teams to have a black player on the team. And when the team started reintegrating again, it was the L.A. Rams, when they moved from Cleveland out to Los Angeles. They're the ones that brought black players back into the league. And eventually, as you said, the Steelers were one of those teams that figured out, hey, if we go to the black colleges, we start identifying these players that nobody else is looking at, we're going to have a real advantage.
Now, one of your key influences on, you know, writing this book was the relationship that you have with Bill Nunn Jr. Give our listeners, you know, an idea on what that was like, having that relationship.
Yes, so Bill Nunn Jr., I didn't know anything about him. I was having lunch with a friend at the Steelers headquarters one day and on the south side in Pittsburgh, and he said, you know, you ought to do a book on Bill Nunn. And I said, you know, who is that? And he started telling me his story, and I was like, wow, that would be an amazing story to tell. Basically, Nunn was this pioneering black athlete. He'd been somebody who was really a standout in terms of basketball. He played high school with the first black to be drafted into the NBA, and then at college he played at West Virginia State, and he played with the first black to start in the NBA. So he had this like Forrest Gump experience as an athlete. And then he comes out and he's got a choice to try out for the New York Knicks, would have been the first black player in the NBA. Got a tryout to go be a Harlem Globetrotter. He had an offer to be there. He also had an offer to go coach basketball. He decided to go for the fame, the fortune, the money, the stability, became a newspaper reporter. So, if only it were still true today, right?
Yeah.
None goes, he spends the next, basically the next 30 years, his job was to travel around the country. He worked for the Pittsburgh Courier, which was the nation's black newspaper. It's hard to believe today, but at that time, they had 14 editions all across the country. If you were black and you lived in some far-off part of the country, this was where you got your news, in the newspaper. They would bring it by the rail line. And so he traveled the country to all the black colleges and put together the Black College All-America team. And by the late 1960s, he started bringing these players to Pittsburgh, had a big banquet every year. The Rooneys are sitting there, Art Rooney Sr., the founder of the team, and his son Dan, the chairman there. They're sitting there, and they're saying, our team's not very good. Why don't we know any of these players? We should hire this guy, Bill Nunn. And so they get him, and he goes out, and he's the one that finds John Stallworth, Mel Blunt, Elsie Greenwood, Donnie Shell. All these players who end up going on and winning multiple Super Bowls in the 1970s are all thanks to this guy, Bill Nunn, who gave him a shot because he understood the black colleges and was able to see things that the other teams weren't looking at.
So, Andy, it sounds like the Rooneys went to Nunn versus Nunn getting the courage to go to them.
Oh, yeah. No, it was the other way around. When the Rooneys gave him an offer, they said, you know, Bill Nunn, come to work for us. You know, we would all think like, oh, wow, this guy has been, you know, he's been granted a golden ticket going to the NFL. They offer him a job and he says, no, thanks. I don't want the job. I'm not coming to work for you. Like, what are you talking about? He said, well, look, you never let me sit in the press box. I've been putting together this list of black college All-America teams. You never paid any attention to it. You never listened to me. Your team's never going to be any good. I'm not coming to work for you. And they finally broke him down, and he said, all right, fine, I'll come, but I need a year to work at the Courier to transition. You know, most people would ask for 2 weeks. He asked for a year. And he worked his way out of the paper and became a scout. And he made the difference. I mean, the Steelers headquarters on the south side here, the draft room is named for Bill Nunn. It has a plaque on the outside of the room. And Bill was actually, when I was talking with him, he was 89 years old, and he had a stroke at Steelers headquarters a week before the draft, and then he ended up dying the day before the draft a week later. And so this guy he lived the game right until the very end, and, you know, really an amazing personality.
Andy, what did Bill tell you about his thoughts and feelings of joining the Steelers and being a guy that was instrumental in bringing an African-American male into the NFL?
You know what? He didn't want the attention. You know, when I went to him and I tried to get him to do a book, and he just wasn't interested. And he kept pushing me to go and learn about all the other people, all the other blacks who'd come before him. And, you know, he didn't want the book to just be about him. He wanted it to be about all these guys who had come before him and who had stood with him. And so I would sit with him, and he would just throw out names like Jake Gaither, who was the coach of Florida A&M, and Ace Mumford at Southern, and Tank Younger, who was had played at Grambling and was the first black college football player when he went to the L.A. Rams. And we would just sit there, and he would throw out these names. And so, you know, he was very unassuming, very humble, didn't want the attention. The only reason he talked with me is because I went to Dan Rooney, the ambassador, the chairman of the team, and told him what I wanted to do. And Dan said he thought it was a good idea, and I went to Kevin Colbert, the general manager of the team. They both leaned on him and, you know, convinced him to at least grant me an interview, and then we went from there. And the more that I kept coming back, I think he figured if he told me no and I went away, then that would be the end of it. But I kept, you know, I was stubborn. I kept coming back and wanted to hear more and more of his stories. And so, the other part was that it was so critical for me. I wanted to get those stories down because the guys of that generation are dying off. And in the process of doing the book, many of the key people that I interviewed died during the reporting. I talked to Elsie Greenwood about a month before he died. Bill Nunn, of course, died. A couple of the key players, they also died during the process of it. And these guys have lived amazing lives. They, you know, by today's standards, we don't think much about race in sports in the NFL too much anymore. But these guys had really put themselves out there at a time when there weren't blacks in sports. And if there were, there were very few of them. And these guys were taking risks and putting themselves in the front line. It was a remarkable thing, and they deserve the credit and the attention for it.
Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review joining us here on The Double. Now, Andy, what would Bill say today as far as the progression that has happened from the black athletes starting to get their chance in the 60s to where they're at now?
Yeah, two things about it, I think. He was still concerned about the front office, you know, that, yeah, you've got, certainly you've got black players now, you've got, you know, black coaches are starting to, you know, be much more common. We've got the Rooney Rule, you know, named for the owners of the Steelers, this idea that they, NFL teams need to interview at least one minority candidate before awarding the job, and that's, you know, how Mike Tomlin here in Pittsburgh ended up getting the job. And so he felt good about that. He was concerned that, you know, what was going to be the next phase in terms of there weren't enough black scouts in his mind, there weren't enough black general managers, so it was about getting more opportunity in the front office. But at the same time, too, he was concerned that there weren't going to be enough white players, which is not a very PC thing to say, and not too many people could get away with saying it. But Bill Nunn, we were sitting at Steelers headquarters one day looking out at the field, and, you know, he said, look, the players were out practicing, and it wasn't the full team, but it was a part of the team, and almost all the players were black. And he said, you know, what I would do is go and find some white boys who like to play football. And, you know, it was an interesting commentary that he was concerned that, you know, the game is becoming too segregated again.
Now, of course, ownership being the pinnacle, and I'm sure that that's something that Bill Nunn would probably smile down, you know, on the NFL if that were to happen. What is causing the lack of African-American ownership, do you think, in the NFL?
Well, it's money, right? I mean, it always comes down to money. And now, you do have, you know, it's an interesting story here in Pittsburgh because you got John Stallworth, who, you know, came up through the black colleges. He was somebody that Nunn identified, and, you know, he brought him to Pittsburgh. And now Stallworth is a part owner of the Steelers. So you are starting to see some of it, but it's, you know, it's another one of those things, like you said, it's a matter of time. It's a matter of coming up with the money and, you know, getting those opportunities. I think it's an evolution. We've seen an incredible transition already, and I think we'll continue to see it. But you also think about the NFL. It's very tradition-bound, right? And, you know, you think about teams that are owned by, you know, the Steelers, the Rooneys with the Steelers, the Maras with the Giants. In many ways, it's a very traditional game, and, you know, that will definitely probably be the last piece to change over, the ownership.
Andy, what are some of the biggest things you learned in interviewing people and writing this book?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that all this took place. I think that was the eye-opening thing that, you know, from my sense, whenever we talk about integration of sports and American life, and, you know, you watch 42 the movie, you think about the Jackie Robinson story, and you think, oh, baseball was integrated. It was over. It was done. Well, it really wasn't like that. You know, when I started looking at it, they integrated. Yeah, okay, sure, the Dodgers brought in Jackie Robinson, but, you know, a lot of teams held out. In football, the Washington Redskins held out for another 20 years. It was, you know, it was the kind of thing where it was a long transition. As late as 1964, when the American Football League had its All-Star game in New Orleans, they tried to have the game there, and the black players had been treated so poorly in New Orleans. They get down there, and, you know, they can't get, the taxi drivers won't give them rides, the club owners won't allow them into the restaurants and bars. The players refused to play, and the American Football League moved its All-Star game from New Orleans to Houston at the last minute. 1964, in my mind, is not that long ago, and, you know, it's more than 20 years after, you know, all this integration stuff was going on. So I think that was the biggest takeaway for me, was that it was a constant struggle. It is a constant struggle. It's not something that happens overnight. It's something that people have to work at long and hard and over and over again.
What does it mean to you to have won a lot of awards, not only in Pennsylvania, but also nationally, for your journalism and things you do in your line of work every day?
Well, it's always nice, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But for me as a journalist and as a writer, the most important thing is the impact you have on people's lives. You know, so I'm an investigative reporter in Pittsburgh. I don't normally write about sports. I love sports, but some of the stories I've done, you know, we've highlighted instances in which, you know, people were getting liver transplants when they weren't sick enough to need them, and it changed the way that livers were allocated around the country and the way doctors were practicing. It was the kind of thing that really impacted people's lives, and as a journalist, that's the most you can hope for, right? Is to you know, as we say in the industry, afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, and have a positive impact on people's lives. The awards are always nice at the end of the day, but that's not what gets me up and keeps me going. It's the, you know, having meaningful impact, and that was true with The Color of Sundays too. Was you know, this was an important story, and I felt like it was going to get lost. There were a couple of times where you know, Bill Nunn and I sat and we talked, and you know, race is one of the hard things conversation to have in America, right? We don't talk about it very often, even though my book is about race. Ironically, most of the interviews focus on the football aspect of it because that's much more easier for us to talk about. And I'm a white writer, and when I talked with Bill Nunn, you know, I asked him, do you think a white guy can tell this story? And he just threw it right back to me and said, well, I don't know. What do you think? Can a white guy tell this story? And so it was more important. You know, I mean, what it came down to was, you know, there weren't a lot of people clamoring to tell the story, and if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to get done. So I was glad to be a part of it, and it, for me, it's been eye-opening and soul-opening, I guess, you know, spiritually, to have that conversation about race and to put myself in an uncomfortable place and really, you know, have those conversations and talk to people. It's been good, and it's been rewarding, much more than I even expected.
Andy Conti, award-winning journalist and writer, joining us here on The Double. Now, Andy, we talked a little bit about the correlation of actual sports and society as far as the breakthroughs in the 60s. What do you think about today when you have affirmative action laws being tested in Texas? And it just seems like the more things change, the more things stay the same. Do you see that happening in our society today?
Yeah, you know, we act today like everything's taken care of, you know, like, oh, you know, civil rights era happened, we fixed it. You know, it was like I was talking about with integration of sports, like, oh, we integrated sports, it's done, no worries, you know. And it ignores the fact that there's a lot of work that needs to take place, a lot of struggle that continues to happen. And, you know, it's short-sighted for us when we close our minds to that and close our eyes to the fact that this stuff happened here in America. It happened within the generations of, you know, people who are still alive within, you know, within our lifetimes, and for us to act like we've taken care of it is not the right way to go about it. You know, we need to continue to have that conversation and put ourselves out there. So that would be my big takeaway on it. Like, you know, and definitely the tools and the situations change over time. You know, things evolve. The NFL, you know, for example, is a far different place now than it was a generation ago. You've got a lot of black coaches in the league now. It's no longer an anomaly, but it's still something that, you know, you need to think about and talk about, and not act like it's just been taken care of and we no longer need to think about that any longer.
Yeah, no, we definitely have to continue to take strides in the right direction and actually find a solution instead of just talking about it and poking at it and choosing our sides. No, I definitely agree.
That, and you've got to realize that there's a lot of feeling behind it. You know, there's still a lot of hurt and pain there that is easy to ignore and say, well, you know, there's no reason for you to feel that way any longer. But, you know, those feelings are still very real. The emotions are still very real. And as a society, I think we have to be smart and think about it. I mean, you know, even you look at it, you know, it's easy in America to say, well, okay, we elected a black president. Done. We took care of racism in America. Well, you know, we know that's not true, right? There's still a lot that has to be done. That's one moment. And yes, it was a big moment, but it's still just one moment in our history.
Now, of course, your strong relationship that you had with Bill Nunn before he passed just last year, did you get a chance to build a relationship with Bill Nunn III? You know, that's who I know. I mean, you know, in 1988, of course, he was in Do the Right Thing as Radio Raheem. And so do you see him actually taking some of the reins and going with what Dad has established?
Yeah, you know, he's a very different guy. And you can't underestimate Radio Raheem, right? Like, such an iconic character, especially for guys in our generation who grew up with that movie, you know, and really important character, but he's a very different guy. It's funny, at Nunn's funeral, Bill Nunn III spoke, of course, and he talked about coming home, his dad coming home from work one day with a baseball glove, you know, and trying to teach his son to throw catch in the backyard, and the son was just, you know, he's just like, I just never got it. It was not, I didn't have anything athletic about me, and people were always asking me, you know, are you going to be like your dad? You're going to go out and do this stuff? And he's like, you know, I just was so grateful that my parents allowed me to go and find my own direction, my own space, and, you know, go and do the thing that I loved, which was acting. So in the sense that, you know, is he going to uphold those feelings and push it forward? He's super close with the Steelers. He and Art Rooney, the current president of the team, they talk almost daily. Those guys grew up going to training camp every summer, you know, hanging out with the players. There's a famous story about how they took me Joe Green's car one day during practice and went for a joyride. You know, those kinds of things, they don't go away, especially in a city like Pittsburgh where you know, those family values are super strong. Yeah, he's an interesting character. I don't think he's going to uphold it the same way that his dad did, but, you know, in many ways he's carved out his own path and done his own thing.
Andy, you've now written two books. I believe your first was Breakaway, the Inside Story of the Pittsburgh Penguins' Rebirth, and, of course, The Color of Sunday is what we've talked about most of the time with you here. What have you learned in writing both of those books, and what do you tell your journalism students at Point Park University?
Yeah, good questions. I mean, the thing I learned was that, you know, you got to take care of your wife. That's the main thing. I'm, you know, every hour I'm spending on the book is an hour that I'm not spending with my family. And so it's a lot. And so you gotta tend to all those home fires, too, at the same time. The other thing is that, you know, it's so hard to look at the whole big picture. You know, if you sit down and say, I'm going to write a book, that's overwhelming. It's like saying, oh, I'm going to go run a marathon. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever run that kind of distance before, your listeners have, you know, you can't sit there and say, oh, I'm going to run 26 miles today. You can say, you know, can I run the next mile? Yeah. Can I get to that light post? Yeah. Can I get, you know, to the end of the block? Yeah. Okay. And then when you get there, can I get to the next block? Writing the book was sort of the same way. It's, you know, what can I do today? Can I write two pages today? Yeah, I can do that. Okay, can I do it again tomorrow, and can I keep going? And the amazing thing is if you do that and you're able to get that kind of discipline, it starts to come together, and pretty soon you're like, oh, I got 90,000 words. The book came together. So, and in terms of what I tell my journalism students, I just tell them to dream big, to hustle. You know, in this day and age with journalism, you got to make your own opportunities. You got to go out there and follow your dreams and really push yourself to just live big and live without regrets, right? I mean, you got to go for it.
Andy Conti, The Color of Sundays is the name of the book. Andy, the author, you can find the book at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or at Andrew's website, andrewconti.wordpress.com. Andy, thank you so much for your time, your insight, a fabulous subject. People should read the book, buy the book, and learn all they can.
Definitely.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate all the questions, particularly about, you know, life in American society and the bigger stories of the book. So thanks for taking the time to check it out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Andy Conti doing great things in and around Pittsburgh, winning awards for his journalism and two great books, The Color of Sundays, The Secret Strategy That Built the Steelers Dynasty. Find it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. All over the book world, a must read for not only Steelers fans, but anybody that wants to learn about history in sports.
Exactly, man. And who would have thought that we would be talking about Steelers football when we talk so much about Raiders and Hawks, which we will definitely be getting into when we come back from the break. But Sean Wally, over 14 million people in the USA and Mexico consider themselves to be Steeler Nation. So that is incredible in itself. Great guest, Andy Conti, on. When we come back, as I just mentioned, we'll be talking Raiders and Hawks. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna pop some tags, only got 20 $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a drummer. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit poweralleyperformance.com.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you tired of being tired, frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds, and more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest, I tried a different product, and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra strength, all natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Wow.
welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd, and I should say international sports radio star Sean Boyd. You did something exciting on Friday, which was really Saturday where it was broadcast. You, well, should I tell it? Do you want to tell it? Should I intro it? I mean, I kind of did.
But yeah, either way, man, it was exciting to get a chance to be a guest on a New Zealand radio show. And that was with Dave Worsley. He was a guest here on The Double. And of course, he's worked with you, Sean Wally, with the Harlem Globetrotters. And he's done some things promoting the Harlem Globetrotters in New Zealand. So it was a lot of fun getting a chance to talk NBA. And they had me on the show to talk about the Golden State Warriors and their undefeated season. And gosh, wouldn't you know it, I probably jinxed the Warriors, but I shouldn't say that too loud, as they wound up winning that night, beating the Boston Celtics, but losing the next night to the Milwaukee Bucks. But nonetheless, man, 24-1, what a great start by the Golden State Warriors, and an excellent experience for me to be on New Zealand radio talking NBA basketball.
So what you're telling everyone is a New Zealand promoter for the Harlem Globetrotters tour and journalist for tennis around the world has his own sports radio show in New Zealand, and he reached out to the Double S Express to talk some NBA.
Man, you know, it was so much fun, and their show is, you know, something similar, I would say, to like a Scott Van Pelt show. It's played nationally, and you know, people were tuning in. And of course, if you got a chance to hear that show a couple of days ago from New Zealand, and you're listening to On the Double right now, welcome from New Zealand. That was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed every minute of it, Sean Wally.
So what were some of the questions they asked, and was it what you would expect anywhere in the USA?
Yeah, man, we talked about the Golden State Warriors because that is the hot topic. They're the best team in the NBA, talking about Steph Curry. And, you know, some of the temperament and how he has taken the NBA by storm. And we also talked about the other side of the pendulum in the NBA, talking about the Philadelphia 76ers and their woes with only one win. Of course, that win coming from Kobe Bryant, who is from Philadelphia, Lower Merion High School in Philadelphia. And so we touched those points there. You know, they asked me to predict the games. And you know, if I could, I need to get that show, and, you know, we need to contact Dave Worsley and get that show, because I believe that through the night, late part of the night, I was pitching or batting 1,000 as far as the predictions that I made. So, man, I was having fun watching that.
Except for the part where you said the Warriors would go 82-0.
Man, well, 81-1 isn't bad, is it? I mean, so... I know that they have their eyes. They had their eyes on a record, which was winning 7 in a row, because no NBA team had won 7 in a row on the road. So they were looking to do that and came up a little short. I know that they had aspirations of going 33-0, because that would have beaten the record by the 1971-72 Los Angeles Lakers. And of course, right now, since those two have fallen through, there's one more that they are eyeing, and I believe that is the 1996 Bulls that went on to beat the Seattle Supersonics, and they
won
72. The Supersonics, and they wound up going 72-10 that year. So, you know, I'm sure Steve Kerr would love to have that feather in his cap.
How insane is it, Sean, that all these things have connected and come full circle with me doing my day job with the Harlem Globetrotters, and Dave Worsley is the promoter. He turns into a guest on our show live from the U.S. Open in New York. And then he turns around and reaches out to us for some insight on the NBA. And you're on a radio show in New Zealand and around the world streaming.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And, you know, that's the beauty of sports. And, you know, when we go through our day-to-day, our rough rigors in life, you know, when you turn on the TV and you're seeing crazy things like, you know, international terrorism, domestic terrorism, you know, just a lot of negativity, you know, not knowing who to believe, who to trust in the, and our government, it's great to have sports. You know, you can always turn to that. You know, you can turn to your favorite team. You can turn to just an outlet that will allow you to release from those everyday things, those goings on. And so, you know, yeah, it coming full circle is great. I mean, of course, you working with Dave Worsley with the Harlem Globetrotters, and, you know, talking NBA basketball and bringing that full circle to New Zealand. So it's a lot of fun, definitely.
All right, Sean, we got a handful of minutes before Hillary Butler joins us for the second time in a few weeks, former Washington Husky, Seattle Seahawk, Denver Bronco as well. But your Oakland Raiders are now 6-7 after giving the Broncos their third loss on the season, a 15-12 victory in Denver. Have the Raiders figured out how to get over that hump and which team they are? Are they the team that found a way to beat one of the better teams in the league yesterday? Or are they the team that almost beat the Steelers, the team that's disappointed Raider Nation seven times this year?
You know, I'll go with the first. They haven't figured it out yet. And that's okay, because, you know, when they do figure it out, they're going to be, you know, one of the stronger teams in the NFL. You know, when you're talking about Derek Carr and you're talking about Amari Cooper and, of course, Michael Crabtree just signing a long-term deal with the Oakland Raiders, which means that is solidifying their receiver core. You knew that the offense could move the ball. You knew that, and you can include Latavius Murray with that as well. One of the big question marks that the Raiders have had were, one, their defensive backs, and can they actually go, you know, get some three and outs? They hadn't been able to do that. We've been seeing this gunslinger mentality from Derek, which shows that they can put points on the board. But this was the first time that we saw the defense actually grind down and play some great football, especially in the second half to close things out. And so, you know, it was great. It was great to see. And they've got a lot to learn, but they will get better moving forward.
Sean, your Raiders struggled on offense, but that being said, the Bronco defense is one of the better defenses in the league, and it was in Denver. You've got not only their defense to combat, but being in thin air a mile high. So how much do you put on those aspects versus, goodness, the Raider offense just wasn't clicking, as Latavius Murray only gets 27 yards on 16 carries?
You know, I just accredit it to, you know, again, it being an interdivision game. You know, you're not going to click on all cylinders on offense always, and you're going to have a strong defense. The Denver Broncos are the number one team in the NFL, number one defense in the NFL. And for the Raiders to come in and beat that defense at their own game says one of two things. It says, one, that the Raiders are actually starting to get it, but it also says, two, that the defensive coordinator that was there the year prior and Jack Del Rio, who is now the head coach in Oakland, has brought and instilled that defensive mindset with the Oakland Raiders. Now, there's some behind the scenes things that we don't know as far as Jack Del Rio and how bad he really wanted to stick it to the Denver Broncos. But there were some talks in the latter years when Jack Del Rio was the defensive coordinator, to where John Elway and Jack Del Rio almost went to blows in the locker room because of the dissension that they had. And so this was a big game for Jack Del Rio to stick it to his old team. And if you notice the way the defense is structured with the Raiders, it's very similar to what the Denver Broncos have. And what I mean by that is that defensive front is similar as far as the pressure that they get on the ball, but more importantly, the super studs that they have at the defensive end outside linebacker position in Von Miller and Khalil Mack. When you have guys that can actually, you know, push that line and cause disruption to the quarterback, you're going to have a lot more hurried throws by the quarterback, which leads to a lot more three and outs, which leads to interceptions and other mistakes. And that's why you got the close game, because these two defenses mimic each other quite a bit.
The Raiders trying to get to 500 and get that seventh victory on the year. Who do they have coming up this next weekend?
Oh, it's a big game. And, of course, one of our big-time guests, David Massey, who's been here on the double, will be down in Northern California. And this will be one of his Christmas presents as the Green Bay Packers come in to O.co with three games left. And then after that, they have San Diego and Kansas City. So, oh my goodness. And, you know, would you believe, Sean, that the Oakland Raiders are actually mathematically in the playoff hunt still? And so, of course, some crazy things have to happen, but not as crazy as you think. But it makes it for great football this late in the season for Oakland. And so when Green Bay comes in, this isn't going to be just, you know, one of these walkover types of games, which might be able to help your Seattle Seahawks out as well, Sean Wally.
Well, please do. Please be the Raiders that played well in Denver, and definitely, you know, bring the heat. You're at home. Let's go, Raiders. You're in the black hole. Give your fans something to cheer about and be in that game. The Packers have struggled in the central part of their schedule, and they got so lucky two Thursdays ago with that ridiculous Hail Mary that the Lions couldn't defend to save their lives. And if it wasn't for that Hail Mary catch to defeat the Lions, who knows what would be going on in so-called Titletown, USA.
You know, it's funny. I love hearing my beloved Seahawk fans when they talk about that Hail Mary, because you were just on the opposite end of that a couple of years prior with the Green Bay Packers. And we're supposed to overlook that. That was destined. That was God giving to the Seattle Seahawks. But now I hear the contrite talk from the Seahawk fans that, oh, it was lucky. Oh, my God. And then this wouldn't have happened and that wouldn't have. Come on. It's football, Sean Wally. And you got to give credit to where credit is due. Aaron Rodgers threw an awesome pass. And the way they came down with it, it was probably one of the cleaner Hail Marys that I've seen. But, yeah, we'll try to do our part in Oakland to help the 12s out up in Seattle.
Sean, time out. I didn't call it luck. I feel for the Lions and their fans more than anything, because they had that game hands down. And, you know, if it wasn't for that phantom face mask call, which was not a face mask, the game would have been over. Yet they gave Aaron Rodgers another chance. And why the Lions didn't know how to cover a Hail Mary is beyond me, but it did not work in their favor.
So were you feeling sorry for the Green Bay Packers when Golden Tate came down with the man had his hand on the ball and they called it a reception in the end zone? Were you feeling sorry for Green Bay then? No, go ahead. I'll wait.
Of course. Sure. I'll shed a tear of joy for them. Why not?
Oh, man, that's some good stuff, man. So, yeah, so we have the Green Bay Packers, Titletown, USA, coming into town. And so that should be a lot of fun. ODOT Co. should be rocking the black hole, moving and shaking. And, yeah, yours truly will be there at the game on the sidelines, of course. And so, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun for us.
Well, somebody that knows a lot about football from the Pee Wee Leagues all the way to the NFL is big time guest number two with us right now on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Hillary Butler, former University of Washington Husky, former Bronco, former Seattle Seahawk. Hillary Butler, thanks for your time tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me back on, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. Good. Man, I feel like we should have had like some super intro as you were saying that, Sean. That was awesome to bring in Hill B like that. What's going on, man?
Not much. If you need me to produce a hot little track for you, just let me know. I'll do so.
Hey, done. Hey, get to work on it. We're going to put that on the double as soon as it comes on wax.
Cool.
I was about to say, between Hillary and myself, we can definitely get that done.
Oh, yeah.
So, hey, man, you got some things coming up. You've got the Beast Tailgate Series that's going on. That's coming up December 20th, I believe. So yeah, tell our listeners what's going on.
Well, that's actually they do a tailgate series every home game. And this weekend I'm lucky enough to get on. There's only two home games left, so I'm lucky to actually catch them. And they asked me to come and do a quick performance, just getting the crowd pumped up before the game. And there's also going to be a signing, autograph signing there by one of my old teammates, Husky teammates, Lawyer Malloy. And, you know, it's just always a fun little atmosphere there. I'm really excited to come out there and get the crowd going.
Well, yeah. So, man, do you have any new tracks that are coming out? I know that we played a couple here on the double, but are you working on some new material?
I am working on some new material now that I'm done coaching football. It'll be released here coming shortly. But right now it's just really about pumping some of my favorite Seahawks songs and some of the crowd's favorite Seahawks songs, like Going Back to the Super Bowl, which has kind of become the theme for this year, and 12th Man Rest of My Life, which I have the video that's out on YouTube right now.
So, Hillary, are you getting any kind of response? Have you had any of the current players listen to your tracks or see your videos on YouTube? And if so, what do they have to say?
Well, the feedback that I'm getting right now is everyone is really liking it. You know, I got an album that's coming out next year, January 5th, my birthday, and it's called Going Beast Mode. And so I've actually got a chance to perform that in front of Marshawn and his mom, Mama Lynch, and his brother, Tay Lynch, and everybody. And I think they like that one a little bit. So, yeah, Going Beast Mode is coming out soon. But, yeah, I really, it's just about not just for the players. It's also music for the fans, because like I say on my song, I'm not just a player, I'm a fan too.
So you've got the tailgate party with the Beast Bus Sunday morning. You'll also be at 88 Keys in Seattle, so you're a busy man doing great things for the 12th Man fans and the Seahawks.
Yeah, and 88 Keys, we just like the Beast Bus, I'm with a group that's called CEC, Celebrity Events Consulting, and we put on a lot of Seahawk-related events where we bring out super fans like Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk, and former players such as myself or Eddie McMillan, who is the owner, along with Shelly Grant, of CEC, and we bring out, you know, like some of the Seahawk-themed cars and Blue Thunder, and we just come out to 88 Keys, and that's also pregame 8 to 12 every Sunday every game day Sunday, and it's a free event. It's just to come in and have fun with us. This weekend we'll be having a Cleveland Browns trivial battle against Seahawk fans and Cleveland Brown fans and alumni, so it's just a really good event, good time to come out, and I support both events, so I'll be performing at one place and then going down to the other place before I go into the game and have a good time.
Well, yeah, definitely having a good time with the Seahawks, building momentum as we're getting towards the end of the season. Now, of course, Hillary, the Seahawks put a thrashing, you know, on their opponent yesterday, you know, it looks like, you know, shades of last year. But, of course, Thomas Rawls going down. Marshawn Lynch is hurt. Now, do you see that momentum slowing any, if any, going forward into the playoffs?
You know, I really don't, and it's really helpful when you got the offense that's starting to click like it is. I mean, gosh, how many times can you say that a guy like Russell Wilson has put up 5 touchdowns this week and 3 touchdowns last week and then 5 the week before it and another 3 before that? He's really on fire. They're really catching rhythm on offense. I think that just the offense moving good, getting the ball out quickly, is allowing us to do some really good things. We're really going to miss Rawls, but, you know, Beast Mode, he'll be back soon. I had that exact same injury my senior year at UW, and I missed my final 4 games, but I was able to still come back and play in the Hula Bowl. So I know that Marshawn Lynch will be able to come back this year and play, but this year it won't be the Hula Bowl for them. It'll be the Super Bowl for the Seahawks.
Now, Hill, of course, you being a defensive player, and the Seahawks haven't really shined as much as they have in the past couple of years, meaning with the Legion of Boom, is the best yet to come for the Seahawks going into these last 3 games of the season?
I think it definitely is yet to come, and it's perfect timing because this is the time that you want to play. Yeah, you set yourself up good early on, but now come December, this is when you want to be playing your best football, and I think that these guys are starting to play their best football. They're starting to believe in each other again. They're starting to play with that good sense of accountability that, hey, I'm my brother, we all we got, we all we need, and I really think it's starting to show. It's perfect timing, and I think everyone is going to be scared having to play these guys. Even if it's a wild card, I don't think wild card has nothing to do with anything, because as people may remember, I was on the Denver Broncos when we won the Super Bowl, and we were a wild card team that year as well. So it doesn't matter where you are, as just as long as you get in, it's a different season, and you get a chance to just build on the momentum that you're starting to gain right now.
Hillary Butler joining us here on the double. Now, Hillary, if you could explain to our listeners, your fans out there, Why is it that right now the Seattle Seahawks can make things look so very easy, but the first 6-7 games, everything was a struggle? Why is there such a difference in to now things look so easy, but why couldn't they look easy in week 2, week 4?
Well, I think that's kind of the same thing that happens with every team. And even though we have a lot of players that came back from the last couple of years, it's still a new season, a new team. You're ready to go into a new season. You're trying to put last year behind you. So I think it just took a little bit of time for everything to start clicking. Of course, we didn't have Cam Winters at first as well. So now everyone is together. We're in sync, and we're just starting to build off that momentum and that camaraderie that they play for.
So this week, the Seahawks welcome in the Cleveland Browns, who actually got a victory yesterday. Johnny Manziel should be directing that ship. Should there be any concern with the Browns coming to town?
Well, I think every game, and I like how the Seahawks do it. Each season, each game is a season each week. So they're just going to approach it that week. And whether or not we get the best Cleveland Browns team that ever showed up, or we get a Cleveland Browns team that doesn't really show up, the Seahawks are going to prepare for it. They're going to be ready. And they're focused now. Now I think they're starting to get a taste of what they can accomplish again. And I think they have that drive. And I think that's going to push them. And it's just, like I said, the Browns just happens to be the team up this week. And I think they're going to look. I think they're going to be ready for them.
Now, Hill, we had our guest on earlier, and Andy Conte. He's a journalist in Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Tribune Gazette. And he wrote a book called The Color of Sundays, and it was derived on the Pittsburgh Steelers and breaking the color barrier in the 60s. Now, you being a modern player, did you ever come across any types of, you know, barriers or anything that you could recall, you know, playing at the University of Washington, Denver Broncos, or in NFL alike?
Well, not necessarily. I think one of the barriers that I can probably just relate to, which was kind of funny now that I look in the NFL, and just about everyone in the NFL has dreadlocks, but back when I played, that was kind of my signature because there weren't really a handful of guys that had dreadlocks. But I do recall a time where I was told while I was playing on the 49ers organization that dreadlocks didn't really fit the 49ers image that they were wanting to portray, so it was best that I should cut them had I wanted to stay with that team. So that was kind of just a funny story back when I played with the 49ers.
You know, yeah, it is such a great success, and knowing that we've come such a long ways and you know, offering the opportunity not just to African American players but all players in general to make this a great, great sport. And so, you know, it sounds like there is a strong progression that's going to continue to be better.
Oh, yeah, and it definitely is. And it's definitely a good game to be a part of. I think it's really getting the attention worldwide now. And I think it's just building off of what the legends before us have created. And hopefully it will just continue to grow and be successful and continue to not get the negative attention that it has in the past.
And now, Hill, you've got your James Brown hat on. Of course, you being a high school football coach, a coach at Lakes High School, one of the top teams in the nation. We won't just say in the state, but one of the top teams in the nation. Now you have that time off. How much time are you putting into the music game? Now, you said you got a couple of songs coming out, but give our listeners what the dedication is like, you know, going into the lab and putting out some good music.
Oh man, well, it's really fun, and I just got lucky to start off. I started off doing music back in 1999 when I first got hurt with the Seahawks, and I was on a record label, Hard Times Records, with one of my buddies, Baldy Loke was his name, but he was my college roommate at University of Washington, and he had a label, and I tell you, the first time that I went on stage with him, it was a Canadian Grey Cup. I got up there and I spit a little 16 on stage, and the crowd went crazy, and I was hooked, and I said, man, I never want to get beat up on the football field. This is how I want to live. So it's really just been fun to be able to go
from concept to CD on the shelf, and I sit in my lab, and you know, I could just come up with something, and when I do, I lay it down. I do everything myself. I have my own record label, Head Breath Productions, so I'm my own engineer, I'm my own producer, I'm my own artist. I do everything, so it's just really fun to be able to do it. It's something that I have the passion for. I've always had it. I've been a B-boy ever since I was growing up in San Francisco as a San Francisco street breaker. So, you know, it's just something that I enjoy doing and will continue to do.
Hillary, what is tougher, making it to the pinnacle in football, being the NFL, or getting a break in the music industry?
Well, I think it's probably a little harder nowadays, and I say that just because, you know, it's funny, most entertainers would like to be football players or sports players, and most sports players would like to be entertainers, and I've just been lucky to kind of be a part of both of them. But it's a little bit harder, I think, music-wise, because everyone is trying to have that successful music career, and there's so many outlets nowadays that football, if you want to be a professional football player, whether there's only a certain way that you can do that, you have to be a great student athlete in high school, you have to go to college, be a great student athlete in college, and then if you're good enough, you get to, you know, if you're one of the, 0.2%, you get a chance to go on to the NFL. But for as far as music, I mean, there's kids nowadays that, little kids, I mean, my son is making music now, and he'll come up to me and say, I just made this beat, let's go record it. And so if you have the outlet or the ability to just record nowadays, home studio, you can make your home studio sound just as good as a $1 million studio, and more people are trying to do that. And so I think it's a little harder for the music business because of that.
Is it safe to say that football came naturally to you and you had to learn and teach yourself musically, lyrically, editing, and all of that that comes with the music side?
No, I wouldn't say it came easier. I mean, I was just blessed to be a great athlete, but I was also blessed, I guess, to have a great artistic talent. So that was really easy. When I was a little kid, I took piano lessons and music lessons. So being a producer from an artist just came as a natural progression for me. So it really wasn't that hard. I mean, it's just whatever I have in my head, I have the ability to make it sound like music coming out of your stereo. So, I mean, it's just it's pretty much the same for me, though. It's just a talent, it's a gift that I was blessed with and enjoy having.
Now, Hillary, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that our listeners can go to hillb.biz if they want to check out what you're doing and up and coming with music.
Yep, exactly. If you want to get the biz on your boy Hillb, go to hillb.biz.
I like it, man. And so this weekend, I know you got a prediction. You got a prediction for the Hawks. So what do we got?
Well, I'm thinking Hawks all the way, all day. And I think it's going to actually be a big win. And I'm thinking it probably will match similar of the games in the past couple of weeks. And I'm thinking probably anywhere about 35-7. That'll probably be my prediction. I think we're gelling all phases, special teams, defense, and offense. I don't think it's going to be that easy for the Browns to score in the clink with all of the 12th man and everything that we do as fans for the team. And I think it's just going to be bad timing for the Browns having to face a great team at a good time.
So there you have it. He'll be predicting, man, that Johnny Football will be frazzled and rattled in the clink, man. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You know how the defense says it.
Yes. But let me say one thing real quick, because I'm doing all of that fun stuff that I did mention, but I do have some serious stuff that is going on this week. There is an organization called 12 Days of Goodness, and you can actually go to 12daysofgoodness.com. They've teamed up with some NFL alumni, the Seahawks alumni legend, the Broncos alumni legend, Nashville, and also Philadelphia. But what we're doing, we started on December 12th, and for 12 days, the next 12 days, or really from the 12th to the 23rd, we're reaching out to senior citizen facilities, and we're just going in there and giving our time and just giving back to the senior citizens who actually end up going kind of unforgotten. It's kind of a sad st- st-
statistic that I just learned about 60% of the elders that live alone or in those assisted facilities, they go without visits, and especially during this time of the year, we just wanted to team up with Answers for Elders Foundation to hopefully touch the hearts of these seniors and hopefully bring brightness into their loneliness over the holidays. And so, like I said, there's the next 12 days of event. You can go to 12daysofgoodness.com to learn about more about the events, but it's just really a good event to be a part of, and I definitely wanted to support that.
Hillary Butler, 12daysofgoodness.com. How do you find time in the day? You're giving back with 12 Days of Goodness. You've got the tailgate parties. You've got your music career, your lyrics, your rap. You're making appearances. You're speaking. You're coaching high school athletes. Man, 24 hours? How many hours in a day do you have?
I tell you, I try to cram it in, and I haven't even mentioned my other profession or occupation, but we'll leave that one for another show. But I stay busy, man, and I'm just blessed to be a part of a lot of great things and trying to just use my resources as much as I can. If I can do anything to help and support a great cause, then that's really what I'm about giving back to the community.
Well, we appreciate you giving your time and giving back to the community. Now, Sunday, you're going to be not one, but two great places. And if the 12th man, Seahawk fans, can only get to one location, should they go to 88 Keys or the Beast Tailgate Series at 2200 Utah Avenue, downtown Seattle, to see Hillary Butler, Lawyer Malloy, and everything Seahawk tailgating has to offer?
Well, you're gonna have great places. I'm actually going to be at both, so I definitely would say try to get to both. One is a great place. 88 Keys is free at the Beast Bus. I believe it's $20 for entry, but you get the food and the drinks along with all of the great entertainment there. So I definitely will be at both, and I definitely say go to both. And then if you get a chance on the 21st, there's actually the Hawk House. We're having an event for the Hawk House, and if you don't know about the Hawk House, it's a great little lighted up house in Kirkland, and they actually on December 21st they have ABC is having the Great Christmas Light Fight. They actually have the third episode, the Hawk House will be on that, so support that. We're supporting the Hawk House, and I'm actually doing a show and performing at the live viewing party, national TV viewing party, at the Box House, and that's going to be the Box House in Pioneer Square in Seattle from 6 to 12 on the 21st. So that's another great event to support.
Now, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Hawk House is all over YouTube with the Christmas lights all over the house, the giant Hawk logo on top of the roof, and you will be helping promote that, be out there for the Great Christmas Light Fight on ABC on the 21st.
Yeah, well, they've already aired, did their filming at the Hawk House, so we're just going to have the national viewing party at the Box House. And then we're going to air Velvet's new music video. He's part of the Hawk House, and he's a part of one of the artists that were featured on that event or on that show series. So, again, we're just another something that I'm supporting. The Hawk House, I know they've been trying to move it. So this is actually a free event with all the donations going directly to the Hawk House. Hopefully we'll be able to move it. But it is something that if you haven't been to it, you definitely want to drive by and see it. It's something that we want to keep because it's not just representing the Seahawks. It also represents the Huskies, the Mariners, the Sonics. I mean, they give it up to all of our Northwest sports, and it's just a great place.
Man, Hill, you're doing some awesome things, man. We're talking about the Beast Bus. We're talking about the Box House, the Hawks House, Hillb.biz, 12 Days of Goodness. Brother, you are 24 hours of greatness, man. And, I mean, you're bringing it. So continue doing what you're doing. I know it's great for the Pacific Northwest to have the local athletes doing some awesome things. Man, keep it up.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you
hey,
guys, man.
Hey, one more thing, man. You talk to Lawyer Malloy. You tell him that he is more than welcome to be a guest here on The Double. He knows what time it is. So when you talk to him, let him know Sean Boyd wants him on as a guest, man.
I'll let him know for sure. Law's my boy, and I'm glad for him. I'm hoping that he'll get that induction into the Hall of Fame this year, as he is getting the nomination already.
That's right. Of course, he's a nominee into the Hall of Fame, and so hopefully he gets that done.
Exactly.
Hillary Butler doing great things in and around the Pacific Northwest for the Seattle Seahawks fans, the 12s. He has won himself a former Seahawk, former University of Washington national champion. Hillary Butler, thank you so much for your time tonight. Have a great time this Sunday. And hey, one way or another, I look forward to meeting you on Sunday at one of the tailgate parties and possibly also at CenturyLink. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Appreciate it, guys. Go home.
All right, Hill. All right.
Peace.
Hillary Butler. Wow. How does he have time to even talk to us as busy as he is?
Man, it's good having him on the show because, you know, he gets on and the energy level amps up another notch. And that's what we like to do here on The Double, bring you the great guests. And man, it's been an awesome show, Sean Wally.
Sean, I'll tell you what, I'm ready to let's go till midnight. Hillary Butler's got me amped. I'm stoked. I'm excited. I'm ready to rock, you know. Shoot, if he can
man,
do that much.
That's better than any energy drink you have ever put down.
And healthier to boot.
And healthier to boot, yes. It's always good to have Hill be on and doing some awesome things. Got a couple of tracks coming out as well. And to give you a little bit of that information, if you want to hear some of his latest songs, you can go to hillb.biz. That's hillb.biz to catch up on that. And of course, if you want to follow the 12 Days of Goodness, you can go to twelvedaysofgoodness.com. And man, Sean, he's doing some awesome things in the community. And man, 12 days sounds awesome.
Could you imagine being, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 plus years old in a retirement home, and all of a sudden Hillary Butler and other former NFL players come strolling through and bringing you memorabilia and sitting down and talking to you for 15 minutes?
Man, that would be a lot of fun. And so, you know, they're doing some great things. And, you know, I like how busy he is doing these cool things, man.
All right, Sean, we haven't had a chance to get your opinion on the Seattle Seahawks. They are moving northward on the national scale of teams you don't want to see in the playoffs. Russell Wilson playing out of his mind, setting records that haven't been touched in 30, 40, 50 years in terms of touchdowns, completion percentage, QB rating, yada, yada. Your thoughts on the outside looking in on Russell and the Seahawks?
You know, one thing is, you know, as far as Russell Wilson is concerned, you know, this guy has a lot of passion. And, you know, that's what he brought to the table is don't question my passion. And, when, you know, the Hawks fans, the 12s were getting a little beside themselves in the beginning of the season and, you know, wanted to poke at why the Seahawks weren't doing what they were doing. And, you know, it was Cam and him asking for a lot of money, which, you know, that was justifiably so. But when it comes to Russell Wilson, man, don't mess with his girl and don't mess with his passion for his girl and football, because he can handle both. And so his quarterback rating, or his rating, passer rating was 139, which was off the charts. And he's doing some great things. 5 TDs this last game that we've talked and touched on. But let's not forget, we've talked about Thomas Rawls. We've talked about the absence of Marshawn Lynch. But what about the resurgence of Doug Baldwin? That cannot be overlooked. I mean, this guy is putting up touchdowns left and right and in droves. I think the last game he had 2 touchdowns. Yesterday he had 3. You know, he's looking like a Pro Bowl Pro Bowl wide receiver. And that whole receiver staff is like Tyler Lockett. I mean, he just keeps maturing week in and week out. So, you know, these guys are the team that you don't want to play. And, you know, they're going to have to, when they get to the postseason, because I'm believing that they will get to the postseason, they're going to have to find a way to keep that going on the road. That's always been what I've talked about as far as the Seattle Seahawks are concerned, is things have been kind of in their favor over the past couple of years when you have home field advantage. But when you're on the road, we're going to see in, you know, during the playoffs, if they can actually pull these out and see what kind of draw they will get as they move forward in the playoffs. That's been my only concern for the Seahawks.
Well, as it stands right now,
in the playoffs, the Seattle Seahawks would face the NFC least champion, if you can even call them that, probably under 500, whether it be the Giants, the Eagles, the Redskins, or a miraculous comeback by the Cowboys, minus Tony Romo, of course. So that first week in the wild card round shouldn't be too much of a blip on the radar. It's that second round, the divisional round, where, okay, now we've got a formidable opponent. We got to turn it up and let the chips fall where they may.
You know, I'm liking the Carolina Panthers. I'm liking what they're doing. I like what Ron Rivera has put together over there. I like the fact that Cam Newton, after signing a huge contract as the staple of the franchise, that he hasn't folded, and he has put together a phenomenal year to the point where they're undefeated. And they're not a team that you can overlook. They're a team that has, you know, they're having a lot of fun. They remind me a lot of the Golden State Warriors on how they love being together. They love each other's company. They love the fans. They love interacting all around. And, you know, just like the Seattle Seahawks were a couple of years ago, you saw a lot of that, you know, where there was interaction and fan presence. And, you know, there was just a great vibe. And I see that in Carolina. And when it's your time, it's your time. And Seahawks talked about destiny and those types of things. Well, I see that in Carolina. Now, as good as Seattle is, and as good as their reputation has been over the past couple of years, I do believe in destiny. I do believe that when you feel it's your time, you won't let anything get in your way. And Seattle is a formidable opponent. They're going to do some great things. I just believe that Carolina will not be denied. And that's over the Arizona Cardinals. Because I was saying that about Arizona, but the more I see Carolina, they look like that team. They look like there's nothing that's going to get in their way, and they're going to make something happen no matter what is happening.
And you talk about the Arizona Cardinals, who, of course, are leading and probably will win the NFC West. You look at them on Thursday. Oh, my gosh. The Minnesota Vikings went into their home and should have at least taken them to overtime, if not won that game on the final play, if not for A, a boneheaded call, B, quarterback for the Vikings, Teddy Bridgewater, not having a clue on what to do in that situation, fumbling the football, turning it over, and losing the game, when at the very least they should have kicked the field goal and tied the game. So I think it showed, especially coming off the Vikings getting thrashed at home in Minnesota by the Seattle Seahawks, that Arizona, yes, they're good. They beat Seattle. They beat Minnesota. They've got Green Bay coming up soon. They've got Philadelphia this next weekend, and then the Seahawks to finish the season. So we're going to see. How good are they? Can they beat the Eagles? Can they beat Green Bay? Can they beat the Seahawks? Will they win the division? Most likely. Odds are in their favor. Not even worried about it. But that being said, you look at what head coach Bruce Arians said in the locker room after that game. He was pissed. He flat out said, "You cannot play like this and expect to win a game. We cannot give up a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter to most teams and still win. If not for that great play by Dwight Freeney on the defensive line to strip Bridgewater, would have been a different story." And then you're looking up at the Packers coming to town, the Seahawks coming to town in must-win games.
Yeah, these are definitely must-win games. And Bruce Arians, he's a no-nonsense type of a coach. And most of the time when he gives those heated speeches, he understands the pulse of his team. And 9 times out of 10, they respond. So we'll see next week if they actually respond. But you're right, Sean. When you're trying to position yourself as a number one seed to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and of course they're 2 games out from the Carolina Panthers, and they're expecting a miracle for that to happen. But yeah, he just wants his team to maintain momentum. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned the last 3 games for the Cardinals because there's no place for them to actually rest. Most of the time, if you're a team that's like 12-2, you're like looking to throttle it down a little bit because, you know, you want to coast. You don't want anybody to get injured. But when you're talking about the teams that they have to play, I mean, you mentioned Green Bay, Seattle. Who is the other one that Arizona has to play?
The Eagles come to town, I believe, Sunday night.
Yeah, which is the easier out of the three, I believe. But still, they still have to play football. So there's no rest. And that might be a good thing for Arizona to not throttle it down and play it safe. But it's not going to be easy. So going into the playoffs for them is a lot tougher. I'm starting to buy into the nostalgia. And year in and year out, you know, there's always a team every so often that comes in undefeated. And, you know, with the Miami Dolphins always holding that over the NFL's heads, and you know, you always hear about the story of Mercury Morris. As soon as the team loses, the last undefeated team loses, he pops the champagne. Man, I just want in my era here on this earth that I want to witness something like that, you know, witness greatness at its best. That's the reason why, you know, most people are jumping on board with the Golden State Warriors. People want to witness greatness. And with the Carolina Panthers, I want to see that happen. I remember when New England was really close before they lost to the New York Giants in the Super Bowl and they had a chance to go undefeated. You know, why would I root for New England? I mean, gosh, I do not like New England for the reasons. I have one Tuck reason and then all of the others. But, you know, why would I want to see that? And here I am with Carolina wanting to see that as well because I just want to see greatness happen. And I'm jumping on that. Kind of jumping on board to see Carolina do that.
Let me put this in your cap. Let me take a feather, place it in your cap, give you food for thought, and have you sleep on it for a week or two or three until the NFL regular season is done. Yes, the Carolina Panthers are undefeated. Yes, they beat the 12's favorite team, the Seattle Seahawks. I'll give you all of that. I don't doubt, and I don't bet against them in saying that they're not a good team. They are. They're a good team. You have to be winning every single game. That being said, let this marinate for a couple weeks and we'll revisit Sean Boyd. The Carolina Panthers, this is no fault of their own, mind you. I understand that. They don't make their schedule, but they have only played two teams that have had an over 500 record. Again, no fault of their own. You play who's on the schedule any given Sunday. But you look at it from an outsider's perspective. They have not exactly had a tough go in 2015. So we'll see. They're going to have home field advantage unless somehow they tank it or somebody gets hurt that's important, like a Cam Newton or whoever it may be, Luke Kuechly, somebody goes down. But we'll see. We'll see when push comes to shove in January should a Arizona or a Seattle or Green Bay come to Carolina. How do they fare? Time will tell.
You know, I love it because, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'm probably still – you know, I'm going to give it some thought, but I'll probably be the same. And, you know, the way listening to you kind of question where Carolina is, that's exactly where Seattle was. But yet Seattle fans thought that the whole world should bow down to the Legion of Boom and bow down to what they were doing, but there was nothing really established. And Seattle went and they proved everybody wrong by winning the Super Bowl. Now, the exact same thing that you're saying, oh, well, maybe if an injury or two happens, you know, then let's see. Well, guess what? The rest of the NFL was saying the same thing a couple of years ago. They didn't believe that the Seattle Seahawks were going to do what they were going to do. And guess what? That injury never happened. Seattle went all the way through. The only people that believed were Seattle, but after they won the Super Bowl, there are a few more 12s that started to join around the nation. And when Seattle came back the next year to the Super Bowl and almost won a second, they picked up more ground. But it had to start somewhere. And so for a Seahawks fan, a 12, to say that is comical to me because because Carolina is in the same boat, three straight NFC South championships. They've been on the cusp of becoming better. They didn't just get good overnight. This team's been there. And so now they have a chance to put the stamp on, and here are the 12s that are going, maybe an injury will happen. You know, when you're a team of destiny, like Seattle was a couple of years ago, you're just a team of destiny. And that's it. There's nothing that anybody can do about it. I applaud the 12s for being excited. I applaud you for being excited about the Seahawks and the minor skepticism that you have on another team being up and coming. But guess what? You can't be on top forever. And at some point, things are going to start to crumble. And you're going to start to have murmurs, which is why we see Marshawn Lynch with problems, with injuries, which why he battled with contract disputes in the beginning. Cam Chancellor, the same thing. Questioning Russell Wilson's passion and this, that, and the other. Those are things that slow you down. You may look the part, and that's what Seattle is good at looking the part right now. But when you're a team of destiny, it becomes entirely different. And so you're right, Sean Wally. I totally agree with you. In the next couple of weeks, we will see. And then when we see that, then we can kind of revisit this again moving forward and see whose stance will change a little bit to the left or the right. But yeah, that's good banter, man. I appreciate it. I will wait and see. But right now, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a guy that's rallying and stirring up some great things in the NFL in Cam Newton, and he's doing an awesome job and leading his team, a lot like Russell Wilson was doing a couple of years ago. And we'll see.
Well, Sean, it would be a great game if the Seahawks make it to battle the Carolina Panthers, which would most likely be in the NFC Championship. It'd be a great game. Two great quarterbacks. And it would be very interesting to see what happens and where things lie. You know, there's a lot of conversation about Cam Newton for MVP. And based on the record of his team and what he's done, he's probably going to lead the MVP votes. Do you agree?
You know, if he doesn't, then there's something wrong, especially if they wind up having the best record in the NFL, which it looks like they should, especially when he is doing so many phenomenal things as far as putting up the numbers in yardage. I mean, if you compare his numbers with Russell Wilson's numbers, they are, you know, I think he eclipses in a couple of categories, even though Russell is doing a phenomenal job. So, and when you look at somebody who's leading their team from where they were the year prior to now, yeah, he's got to be the odds-on favorite for the MVP. And so I don't see why he wouldn't win that.
Is that based on overall record right now?
No, I think it's, you know, even though it's based more on statistical, the MVP is based more statistically, I just think that what he is doing to galvanize, you know, the league, that plays a factor. And I know that it doesn't, but when you watch Cam and you watch the excitement that his team brings, you watch the excitement that he brings as soon as one of their guys gets a touchdown, and how he interacts with fans and how good it you know, that atmosphere feels. Yeah, you know, he's got to be the feel good factor in the NFL.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you mentioned Wilson along with Cam Newton. Let's go over some numbers. Some favor Cam, some favor Dangerous Wilson on Twitter. Pass attempts. Russell Wilson, 384. Cam Newton, 394 in 13 games. Cam, 10 more attempts. Completions. Russell, 264 to Cam's 233. Completion percentage, 68.8 for Wilson, 59.1 for Newton. Passing yards. 3,289 for one Russell Wilson, 3,062 for Cam Newton. Yards per attempt. Cam Newton, 7.8. Russell Wilson, 8.6. Touchdown passes. Russell Wilson, 26. Cam Newton, 28. Interceptions.
Wilson, 7. Newton, 10. Passer rating, Wilson, 110. Newton, 96.9. So there you go. A lot of numbers.
Good numbers.
Some are awesome for, they're awesome for both. Let's be honest. Neither of them are bad in anything. Yet, a lot of people think Newton's the MVP, yet there are other quarterbacks, Wilson being one, who have better numbers in certain spots. So, really, as we've learned, look at last year. J.J. Watt blew the league away in defensive categories in terms of tackles, sacks, hurries, pressures, all of that on the quarterback. But because he was on a poor-performing overall team with their overall record, he didn't win the MVP. And now you've got Cam Newton, a good quarterback, trying to be great, as is Wilson. The better record belongs to Newton and the Panthers. But a handful of stats are better for Wilson. So really, it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, number-wise, they, you know, it sounds like Russell Wilson is very comparable to Cam Newton. But when it all boils down to it, when you're talking about 8-5 to 14-0, then it's, there's no comparison. And so, you know, that's what, you know, in the whole totality of things, that's what the MVP is about, how you're leading your team as a leader down the stretch. And so even though numbers play a big role, it's how you're leading your team. And so that record is going to, I believe, catapult Cam Newton to get the MVP.
And that very may well be. Man, there's so much we could debate, we could question, we could continue. But man, we are beyond overtime. Donald Newsom's probably snoozing, snoring away in Paradise, California. But Sean, it's been a fantastic show. I know I've enjoyed it. Hopefully the listeners have. And hey, before we run, I got to say a thank you. I have to say a thank you to one Sean Boyd for telling me to start one Tyler Lockett in my fantasy league, which was early in the week, which was for my Survivor Cup, which is a separate item from the playoffs. So I started Lockett and Julius Thomas at tight end, which were my questions. And that was, you know, you had pushed me over the edge on those. I was not sure which way to go. And then I woke up Sunday morning with my actual playoff team ready to go, a separate competition, the real, just like everybody's fantasy football league, playoffs start this week. And I was in the playoffs. And I talked to the beloved Kaylee, and I said, what do I do? Do I go opposite of the other thing where Tyler Lockett was started because of Sean Boyd's push over the edge? And she said, no, you stay with Tyler Lockett because he's the man and the Hawks are rolling. And I said, you know what, Kaylee, you're right. We all love Tyler Lockett. He is the man. Russell Wilson is phenomenal, and he's going to get him the ball today. So I start Lockett, and he got me 31 points.
Man, I am touched. I have a tear in the corner of my eye.
Not only that, but it is Kaylee's birthday week. So as this is the show of her birthday week, happy birthday to Kaylee.
Well, yes, definitely happy birthday to Kaylee. And of course, the tossing and turning that you had in starting Tyler Lockett, it couldn't have been that you were just you bleed true blue. They couldn't have been that is why you started it. It had to be because of me and
because
Kaylee.
Of you and Kaylee, yes. Absolutely. But Sean, Mike Evans, you know, Mike Evans was my other choice. And he was projected by NFL.com to get 22 points.
And I told
for Tampa
you,
Bay.
Yes, you're right.
And what did he do? He got like 2 points.
And he got pulled out of the game or something crazy like that too, man. Yeah, and so, you know, I try to say that to all my friends and everything. I know a little something. Right now, I just won my first week thanks to Odell Beckham Jr. He's at 37 right now, which put me over the top to win my playoff game. And so, yeah, I know a little something. So congratulations to you winning your first week, me going on to win my first week here. Much success to you moving forward and hope that you win your championship, man.
And, hey, thanks to you and Kaylee, the Wallinator Express, yes, I said Wallinator Express, choo-choo, scored the most points in the entire league moving forward.
Awesome stuff, man. Awesome stuff. So congratulations to you on that, and happy birthday this week to Miss Kaylee. I know you're going to enjoy a fantastic, awesome day with Mr. Wally. So happy birthday this upcoming week. And so, man, it's been a great, great show. We've had two awesome guests. We had Andy Conti on, the author of The Color of Sundays, and that was a book on, you know, the up and comings as far as black athletes coming into the NFL. It was great having Andy Conti on the show. And a guest number two, you know, the Pacific Northwest's own Hillary Butler on the show here on The Double, talking about, you know, some of the things that he's doing, you know, with the, and talking about Seahawks action coming up this weekend against the Cleveland Browns. And so it is an awesome, awesome show that we have had here. And we enjoy you as listeners. And again, a shout out to our New Zealand listeners. If you are plugged in, thanks for listening to On the Double. We appreciate it. If you want to listen to any archives of On the Double with the Double S Express, you can go to www.bbsradio.com/DSX. Again, that's www.bbsradio.com/DSX. It's been a great show, everybody. And like we always say here on the Double, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Sean Wally in Eastern Washington, up in the PNW. Don Newsom in Paradise, California, our engineer. And yours truly, Sean Boyd, in Northern California, in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
I'm gonna hop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a come up. This is awesome.